Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
I'm still a whip guy. Welcome back to Royals Weekly. I am your host, Marcus Mead, and joining me as always, a man who just applied to be Jason Kelce's chest hair stylist, my brother Mike.
Hey, Jason, have your people, call my people. I can do some wonderful things for you. You already got a lot to work with. I believe that we can make this an all-time chest hair. You know, I'm talking Magnum PI chest hair up on the Mount Rushmore of chest hair design.
Yeah, yours is good. I've seen it. It is good. I'm not going to lie, Jason. He's the man has skill. In this area. And so, you know, get him in there. He'll do some crazy stuff with it. It'll be really good.
I'm going to take you from 9 to 11.
Right? this week's episode, we'll discuss the latest free agent signing from the Royals and what it means for the rest of the roster, answer questions from the best and brightest of the weekly weirdos, and discuss what role some of the Royals prospects closest to the major leagues might have this season. Hey, I don't know if you all know, we're recording this Sunday night. The Chiefs are going to the Super Bowl, if you haven't heard. The Kansas City Chiefs made it to the Super Bowl earlier today. So Mike's been celebrating all day. Even before the game started, he was celebrating. And so
I knew it was going to happen.
He's feeling good. He's feeling good. So that's really nice. We also, before we really get started here, we have a big announcement to make. Mike, give me some sort of intro for this big announcement that we're making today.
Bum, bum, bum.
Royals Weekly is now a proud member of the Believe Sports Network. That's right. After being wooed by several networks in the past, we've decided to join the Believe Sports Network as their Kansas City Royals outlet. What does that mean for you, the listener? It doesn't mean much, honestly. You can still get Royals Weekly everywhere you normally do, but you may be able to find our content in other places as well, as Believe has distribution deals with many outlets and so on and so forth. So for us, it'll mean a larger community to joke around with, to talk to argue with, all that sort of stuff. So make sure you're subscribing on YouTube and following on the social medias you use, as we'll continue to have certain things come out. We have another huge announcement coming out in a few weeks, so make sure you're following for that. But thank you to the Believe Sports Network for welcoming us and working with us to put out the best Royals content two bums from the sticks could ever hope to put out there. We also need to mention that Royals Weekly is brought to you by Knapp Family Wealth. Mike, can you think of anything more important than securing your financial future?
For me, it's figuring out what the word Riz means.
I think it's some kind of imported cheese.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense, because I heard some kid saying he was going to spread his Riz around the other day.
You shouldn't be around conversations like that. Securing your financial future is one of the most important steps someone can take for themselves and their family, and Knapp Family Wealth is ready to help you pursue it. This isn't some big faceless corporation we're talking about here. Knapp Family Wealth is run by J.C. Knapp. He's a huge baseball fan, and he's been helping people plan for their financial futures for 20 years. He can help with retirement planning so you don't have to work until you're dead, education planning so your kids learn to read good, investment management so you get all that money from out of your mattress and get it working for you. Don't spend another day thinking you've got it all figured out, because trust me, you don't. Check out Knapp Family Wealth at knappfamilywealth.com. That's K-N-A-P-P familywealth.com. Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA/SIPC. The Royals continued their offseason splurge last week by signing veteran second baseman Adam Frazier to a one-year, $2 million deal with an $8.5 million mutual option for the next year and a $2.5 million buyout. So the contract is essentially a one-year, or I guess guaranteed contract of $4.5 million. A small sum for a guy who has a chance to be a 1-2 war player if he sort of gets back to what he was doing best. Mike, what are your thoughts on Frazier as a player before we dig into whether or not what it's going to mean for the roster? What do you think of just him as a player?
I don't dislike the player for what he is, which is at this point at 32 years old, he's a good utility guy, probably a subpar everyday kind of guy. He had some good years in Pittsburgh. Last year, he was with Baltimore, and some people are like, well, he hit 13 home runs. That's Baltimore, people. Okay, he's not hitting 13 home runs in Kauffman. And so, you know, I'm fine with it. One-year deals that are cheap, I think, are fine. The real head-scratcher for me is what we're going to talk about here in a second. Now the 26-man roster is really tight. We talked about it already being tight, and now it's going to be really tight. So it'll be interesting. How about you? What are you thinking of Adam Frazier? I was stunned that they did it.
I mean, they said they wanted a left-handed utility bat. I don't see Frazier as a real utility player much. He pretty much just plays second. I don't know that he can play short all that well at his age. Maybe he could play third if you're comfortable having a fairly weak-armed third baseman out there for a day. Think of him like Nicky Lopez, I guess, but the defense isn't Nicky Lopez quality.
No. Somebody said that, but no.
Yeah, the defense isn't quite that good.
And the offense is better. I mean, the offense is better than Nicky
Lopez. The offense probably is more consistently good than Nicky Lopez's because he probably strikes out a little bit less. He has better line drive numbers and things like that. Walks a little, maybe a little bit more. The thing about Adam Frazier is he doesn't hit the ball very hard. He was the second percentile in hard hit rate last year, which means only 1%, roughly 2% of major league hitters hit worse than him in terms of hard hit rate. So he does not hit the ball very hard. And anytime you don't hit the ball very hard, that makes it really hard to get hits and be offensively productive. It means you have to have a super high line drive rate. You have to be in the sweet spot in terms of line drives constantly, or just get really lucky with batted balls that shouldn't really fog as hits. And so Frazier's going to have a really difficult time being offensively productive in Kauffman Stadium, especially, but just generally speaking. And so he's going to have to provide base running value. He's going to have to do things, the little things and stuff like that. It is always good to have depth and competition. And so, yeah, it's probably good that they're adding some kind of talent to the organization, and a 1 year, essentially $4.5 million deal means nothing. I mean, there are no bad 1 year deals, and there are really no bad 1 year deals for less than $5 million. And so, you know, he's fine. You know, it's fine. But there are questions about what it means for the rest of the roster. So let's talk a little bit about those. Mike, now that Frazier has to be added, and you're pretty certain he's going to get a 26-man roster spot because they're paying him $4.5 million and he's a free agent sign, and he doesn't have options or anything, I don't think. Maybe he does, but even if he did, I don't know that would matter because he's old enough to opt out of that. What does this mean for Michael Massey, Nick Lofton, and Samad Taylor? That's the question we're really asking. How do you see this situation working out? Or I guess more to the point, how do you want the situation with Massey, Lofton, and Taylor to work out in terms of this roster?
Well, I assumed that somebody would be traded. I assumed that they would be moving on from maybe a Massey or, you know, a Waters, even possibly a Melendez still. But the longer we go, the more I just keep wondering if this means that Lofton, Massey, possibly both of them, are starting in AAA. You know, that's kind of what I wonder. That it's not like they couldn't use it. They could use some development still. Massey can work on the approach. Lofton, the same thing. So maybe one of those guys starts in, because here's the deal. You have Hampson too. And Hampson also plays second base. Right. And Hampson, yeah, Hampson also can play outfield and things like that. But now you have Adam Frazier, Hampson, Massey. You've got, you know, Samad is down there in AAA. I definitely expect him to stay there. You've got Lofton. Somebody, not all those guys can make the 26 man. And they're not going to put, they didn't sign Adam Frazier to put him in AAA. So I think you're going to, I think now I'm leaning more towards you're going to see Massey and or possibly both and or Lofton in AAA. And I'd be fine with that. I would be fine with Massey and Lofton, honestly, starting in AAA and working on the things that they need to work on down there.
Yeah, definitely. And it's not a bad thing to have those guys on deck in AAA, right? Like, now maybe one of them makes it. Maybe of those three, Massey, Lofton, and Taylor, one of them ends up in Major League Baseball, and Frazier sits as like kind of a backup behind them, or and it becomes real rotational or something like that. But I see Frazier as kind of insurance in case Massey or Lofton really makes no offensive progression and, you know, can't really handle being an everyday Major League player. Okay, Frazier, we kind of know that you can handle it sort of to some degree. And so, you know, he's in there instead, you know. That's kind of how I'm viewing Frazier. Now, what the Royals seem to be doing is leaning into the fact that they have young players who have options. If you have options, you can be stashed in AAA. You build a deep roster where you have guys who, when your guys get hurt, you can bring somebody up who's not going to be well below Major League average. They're going to, or well below like replacement level even. And so, you know, let's say Frazier starts out as the starting second baseman for some reason, or something happens, and so he's the starting second baseman. If Lofton and Massey are stashed in AAA, if Frazier goes down or is ineffective or whatever, here comes Massey. Here comes Lofton. Like, they have Major League experience. Maybe they've made some progress, that sort of thing. Now, maybe it happens in the reverse way. Michael Massey plays great in spring training. It looks like he's a different hitter. He starts, and Frazier's just a guy who's providing depth, and Lofton gets traded at some point or something like that. I don't know. But you give yourself way more options by having a guy like Frazier on your team. Might he get traded midseason? Sure, he might get traded at midseason because they found out that Massey and Lofton are both ready to be major leaguers. But if he doesn't, then at least you have that depth, if that makes sense. And good teams have depth. Royals Weekly is brought to you by Eric Oxer of West USA Realty. Phoenix has all of our favorite things: year-round golf, year-round baseball, and Eric Oxer of West USA Realty. Whether you want to buy your dream retirement home or just stay a while and catch spring training, Eric can help you find the perfect house for you. We've known him for 30 years and trust him far more than we even trust each other.
You remember that night I woke up to see you standing over me with a knife?
Yeah, I'd lost the mayo. I was making a sandwich, you know, just making a sandwich.
Yeah.
Eric does long-term rentals for the snowbird crowd. Eric does long-term rentals for the snowbird crowd and home sales and purchases for those who want to stay a while longer. Are you a baseball parent or player who needs a place in the Phoenix area? Eric will find you the perfect spot fast. Want to spend your days shanking golf balls into the great beyond? Eric knows the golf scene like Mike knows the intricacies of the penal system.
They say you should always hire a lawyer, but I just like to outsmart the cops by swallowing all the evidence. So they got nothing on me.
Classic. That's a classic Mike move. Find Eric online at ericoxer.com if you can figure out how to spell his name. It's ericoxier.com. Or just shoot him a text at 480-383-9745. That's 480-383-9745. Even if you're just curious about what he can do for you, he's 100% no pressure, one of the best people we know.
And he makes a mean chicken piccata.
Occasionally, Mike and I decide that we've done enough work to make this podcast and turn creative direction over to the people.
Like Bane.
He didn't actually turn it over to the people, okay? I don't point that out. But we are. We're actually turning it over.
He is the hero of that movie, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay. We're getting into a dark place here. We're doing a mailbag episode where we take a stab at answering your questions about the Kansas City Royals. No, we can't tell you if they're going to win a World Series or hire Chris Getz as the next team president, probably. But we'll do our best to provide context, insight, knowledge, and a few tasteless jokes. Our first question comes from we have a whole bunch of questions, by the way. Just Weekly Weirdos really came through for us. This might take a while, okay? We got a bunch of questions. Our first question comes from Sam Kernick on Twitter.
Sean Kernick on Twitter.
Has the rotation improved enough for us to be competitive? Any updates on Pasquantino? Mike, what do you think about the rotation and whether or not it will make the Royals competitive?
And I hate to start us off with this one because I'm going to be a little bit of a Debbie Downer here. The rotation, I think, still has to get pretty lucky with health outcomes and performance outcomes to be competitive for the division. But they will be in a lot more games. This rotation is a lot better than last year's rotation. I fully believe that. If they're healthy and if they are the players that they were last year, have been the last couple of years. And I think that they can be. It's still not a deep rotation. And you never know. Like, Lugo's got 1 year of starting, of solid numbers starting. Waka has a couple, you know, in a row here now, but he had a stretch where he wasn't great either. And so, and you know, we love Cole Reagans, but he's got what, 15 starts of really good baseball in Major League Baseball. And Singer, who the hell knows what's going on there?
12. He's got 12 starts.
Yeah. I hate to be the Debbie Downer, but this rotation could be as bad. It won't be as bad as last year, but they could be not what we all hope that they're going to be. Now, everything turns out right. I think they compete for the division. Everything turns out right in this rotation. I think they compete for the division.
Yeah, this question sort of depends on what you mean by competitive. If you mean compete for the division, then they do need things to go right, right? They need to get lucky with health and performance. But tell me what team doesn't, right? What team doesn't need most of their starters to stay healthy? What team doesn't need most of their starters to not regress massively or have a massively off year?
The Dodgers.
Well, the Dodgers even need that to some degree. I mean, you know, nobody has 15 starters. Nobody's 15 starters deep. Okay. That just doesn't happen. And so, you know, yes, they need to get lucky. Yes, they need to all that sort of thing. They need all those things. But this team actually has the chance to be competitive. This team actually has a better chance to get that luck because they have more established players in the rotation. They have Michael Wacha. They have Seth Lugo. They're giving themselves a better chance to be quote unquote lucky, if that makes sense. So yeah, I'm like starting to convince myself that they may have a chance to challenge for this division, honestly. And part of that's what the Royals have done, and part of that's what the rest of the division hasn't done. Right? The rest of the division hasn't done that much to change or improve. Like some teams definitely haven't. Cleveland, the White Sox, they haven't done anything, right? Detroit is really the only team that's gotten any better this offseason. And so we'll see. You know, I don't want to be the type of person who's just been stung so bad by bad teams previously that I'm unwilling to give an objective assessment of this team compared to others, if that makes sense. That question did also ask about an update on Pasquantino. I'll just say this. The only update I have on Pasquantino is that he's ready to go, right? Like he posts on Twitter quite a bit that he is excited for the season. We see him hitting in the cage all the time. He looks ready to go. So he should be fine. Next question comes from, thank you for that question, by the way, Sean. We really appreciate it. Next question comes from New Casey Recap on Twitter. The question is, what three players are you most excited to see in spring training? And could the two of you combined beat a hippo in a fight? This is a classic Weekly Weirdo question right here. I love it.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I must have been reading that wrong because I read that second question. I was like, that doesn't make any sense. But now it does. Now I'm intrigued.
Makes perfect sense. And we'll let this be a nice little teaser preview for our spring training coverage. Mike and I are both going to spring training again this year. Going to provide daily episodes from down there. We're staying for a little bit longer this time even too. And odds are we won't both get sick on our trip down there and both get hit by some massive disease that Mike essentially gave us all. But, you know, whatever.
Plague.
So yes, who are we excited to see down in spring training? Mike, who are you most excited to see?
Three guys, and I know I've mentioned the first one already, but Daniel Lynch is the pitcher I'm most excited to see because last year, before spring training started or during spring training, I can't remember which one, Andy Rogers put out a piece on what he was working on and stuff, and you and I were very heavily critical, not of the piece itself, she did a great job and always does, but of the fact that that's what he was working on. And so I'm really interested to see what Daniel Lynch, which essentially was, I'm working on something that doesn't really matter. Okay. But I'm really excited to see what kind of a different pitcher Daniel Lynch looks like in spring training. Whether the Royals have good depth in the rotation will largely depend on guys like Daniel Lynch, Angel Zerpa, you know, Veneziano, all those guys they're stashing in AAA. And so, I'm really interested to see Daniel Lynch because it's an important year for Daniel Lynch. It really is. And so excited to see what he brings. Mikel Garcia is also, with all the hype that I've been hearing coming from the Dominican Winter League, I gotta see something from Mikel Garcia. Oh, is he in Venezuela?
I think he's playing in the Venezuelan Winter League. I could be wrong, but he's playing the Venezuelan Winter League.
Either way, I've seen so much stuff from that, the huge brawl thing after his home run the other day. From what I've heard, it's a little bit more loft and still hitting the ball pretty hard. So I want to see what he brings to the table in year two. I'd also like this. I'm a little interested to see his approach because I feel like throughout as the year went on last year, his approach got a little bit worse So I want to see that kind of tick back up. And then Vinny coming off the injury. Does he still look like the Vinny Pasquantino that we think we really like? He made some changes before last year, and I don't know if those worked out quite the way that he was or in that short time that he had. And so I kind of want to see what he does coming off that injury as well. Oh, and could we beat a hippo in a fight?
Yeah.
Boy, that hippo don't know what's coming. We're Cheryl Meade's kids. Come on.
Come on now. Mikel Garcia is all in my list too, honestly, and for the exact same reasons. I've just seen a lot of video from his winter league performance, and I noticed that his swing looks different, and I want to see what that difference is doing for him in terms of the ability to elevate. And if he can do that, he takes the step forward offensively and becomes a different kind of ball player. And so I'm really excited about what that might look like. And so I'm psyched to see him in spring training. My other two guys are minor league guys. I'm excited to see Trevor Warner, not for the reason that you might think. Like, I'm not really interested in watching him hit. I know that he's going to be have a bunch of power and be in the cage and things like that. I'm not going to get to see too many of his games, probably. I'm really just looking to watch him take infield drills. I want to see what third base looks like for him. He had a bunch of errors in his debut season and needs to get better defensively at third, but he has a cannon for a right arm. And you know, I'm intrigued by what I see over there. So if he has the athleticism to stick and be at least an average third baseman, I think that could be really huge for his development as a player and his value. And so I'll be watching a lot of him at third base when I go to the backfields with Mike. I'll also have my eyes peeled for Frank Mazzucato on the backfields because, and this is just based on one thing, somebody put out a photo the other day of Frank Mazzucato, and that dude looks significantly bigger than he did last year. And I'm a little bit intrigued by the fact that Frank Mazzucato might have put on a significant amount of muscle in the offseason. And if that's the case, I want to get a look at him, see how hard he's throwing, see what his stuff looks like. So I'm excited to see Frank Mazzucato as well. Could we beat a hippo in a fight? Absolutely not, obviously. But I think we could probably outrun it.
What kind of weapons do really I get?
Yeah.
If I can have a gun. There is no way we're outrunning hippos.
Don't they stay in the water? I mean, I don't know. I don't know anything about hippos. Question comes from Jim on Twitter. Mike, is this your father-in-law? Is Jim sending us questions on Twitter?
I don't think so. I don't think he's on Twitter, but great name, Jim.
Great job, Jim. Jim on Twitter asks, I think this Frazier deal puts the Royals in serious contention for the Central Crown. What do you think, Mike?
I don't think the Frazier deal does. I don't think it was that did it. And honestly, I don't know that they necessarily are. I don't know that the Frazier move really moves the needle at all. For me, the interesting thing though is, and I think this might be why it gives, you know, the idea that they might compete in the Central. I think part of it is that the other teams haven't done much, but if you look at all the free agent picks that they've had, whether it's Waka, Lugo, Hampson, Frazier, Renfro, I feel like they're guys whose floor is a little higher than a lot of the guys whose place at bats they're probably going to be taking. A little bit more consistency from these players, or in Renfro's case, maybe it's a little bit of a bounce back thing, but you know what you're getting with Frazier. You know pretty much what you're getting with Waka. You think you know what you're getting in Lugo. Same with like Will Smith and even those guys, even the bullpen guys. Like, I feel like they said, we're not going to go with guys who have a phenomenal week and three bad weeks. We'll take four average weeks over that all day long. And so they went with a lot of guys that you can really count on and are more consistent because they want to be in games, you know? And so I think they're going to be in a lot of games. It just depends on, can they make the play to pull it out at the end? Can they have the bullpen that stops people? I think there's still some real big questions on that, but I don't think Frazier's deal really puts them over the top or anything. I think it's just part of that plan. Get more guys in with higher floors and you're going to be more consistent.
Right. It doesn't move the needle a ton, but that's sort of, they're operating from a theory that I really like and find very interesting. That's like, baseball is about depth. Baseball is about the bottom of your roster. Let's drastically improve the bottom of our roster. Let's drastically overhaul our roster for depth. And that's what they've done. And the great thing about doing that as the team that they currently are is, all of these deals like Frazier and Renfro and even Waka and Will Smith and those, all of those deals can instantly basically be turned into prospect capital at the trade deadline. So what they could also be doing here is hedging their bet like, hey, if we're not competitive, if we spent all this money this offseason to, you know, just be a 72-win team, guess what? We have now found a way to replenish our farm system as well. We're going to trade Will Smith. We're going to trade Chris Stratton. We're going to trade Renfro. We're going to trade Frazier. We're going to look to trade Waka, all these sort of things. Those are all options, and they can get a huge haul back at the deadline if they want to. That is an option on the table if they want to take that option. So we'll see on that. Interestingly, it's whether or not they're competitive for the division, they've put themselves in a really good position, whether they go for the division or whether they're just looking to turn around a very weak organization and very weak farm system. Our next question comes from Tom Timmons on Twitter. With a lot of talent left on the board, who is one free agent you think Kansas City could make a late push for? Mike, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't think this is, honestly, I don't think it's going to be any of them. I looked through the list. I do like yours was probably the one I thought the most of, and I'll let you talk about that. But one that I thought was super interesting that I think is a huge long shot is Michael Lorenzen. He's technically a starting pitcher, but he's had some work in the bullpen too. I think the Royals might use him in more of a swing man thing. But I'd be interested to see him. He used to pitch for the Tigers. He's been pretty consistent for several years when he's healthy. When he's healthy, he's been very consistent between 3.5 and a 4.5 ERA. But again, it's the health thing. And it hasn't been big time health stuff, although he did have a shoulder thing that took him out, I think, in 21 for quite a long time. But I it would be interesting. If the market for him isn't great, then maybe you look at that. But I think there's going to be somebody who gives him a chance to start, which honestly, if he comes in, he probably gets the fifth spot and you're kicking Lyles to the swingman guy, to be honest with you, unless you have a concern about his health. So, Michael Lorenzen is still interesting to me that he's still out there.
Yeah, I don't think that there is anyone that they would make a late push for unless that person is maybe a bullpen guy, right? Maybe a bullpen guy. I mean, I think they might do like some minor league bullpen deals and stuff like that. But the only guy I think would even have, or the guy who would have the closest chance, though I think this is unlikely as well, is Ryan Stanek, a guy who has history with Matt Quatero from Tampa Bay, a guy who is drawing a lot of interest as a bullpen pitcher, as a reliever. It won't happen, but the Royals have a bullpen that sets up like with some guys right now in McMillan, in MacArthur, in Angel Zerpa, in a couple other guys who have options and they could easily store in AAA, move up and down, that sort of thing. And so Stanek makes a little bit of sense if they want to do something like that. But honestly, I think they're done making free agent moves at this point. Next question comes from Chance Winchester on Twitter. I think he asked us a question in our last mailbag, honestly. The question is, what player or players do you see us trading and getting the most out of this season at the trade deadline? Mike, what are your thoughts on who might get moved in July if the Royals aren't competitive?
Yeah, I had to put a note on this. Chance, this was a great question and so hard to think about because there's just so many variables. You know, if guys are really performing, are we winning? And so, like, what kind of value do you get? You don't want to trade a guy away if you're competitive. And really, the thing that makes it so difficult is that the Central doesn't look like it's going to be that good. You know, so it may not take much to win the Central. And so that's what kind of makes this really tough. But I'm going to go with Michael Waka because there's always such a high demand for starting pitching at the trade deadline. I think, of course, the 1A is Waka to me, but 1B is Hunter Renfro. If Hunter Renfro comes out and he's bashing baseballs, the other thing that's really hard to find at the deadline a lot of times is power bats. And so, you know, Renfro go be a DH for some team that's making a playoff run. And if he's clubbing baseballs, then there's a good chance he gets moved since he's basically on a 1-year deal, if I'm not mistaken, right? It was 1 year with a second year player option on him. And so, I think one of those guys is likely to go at the deadline, which is good because if they're going, they're probably performing. And if those guys are performing, there's a chance you can get something for them.
Yeah, I mean, obviously all the guys on basically one-year deals or some kind of one-year deal are options to get moved at the deadline. So Waka, Renfro, Frazier, Hampson, a few others. Will Smith, obviously. Chris Stratton is, I think, on a 2-year deal. But he would still be an option for trading because that extra year will just give you more value. And so you could get more in return. I think a sneaky guy, a guy to keep your eye on who could be a trade candidate at the deadline is Brady Singer, honestly. They talked about him at this year's deadline as a trade candidate because he's about to hit arbitration because, you know, he's valuable. He's a starting pitcher, and that's valuable to some people. And I think sometimes the Royals get a little frustrated at his unwillingness to adapt, to change, to add pitches, that sort of thing. And they're like, we can do without Brady Singer. Let's move on. Right. And so other teams might find him valuable. Other teams might be willing to take him on. They might be looking to trade him. And it's part of the Rays model often that they move on from guys who are hitting arbitration if they're going to be making big money in arbitration. And Singer is probably going to make pretty significant money in arbitration because he has so much playing experience in that time. And so he's played a lot of games. He started a lot of games. He's had some success in the major leagues. That's going to push his arbitration number up. And if they're like, we don't want to pay that for Brady Singer, trade him. Some other team might be willing to. Drew Waters is another candidate to me who might be a potential trade piece at the deadline. If he has a good first half, they might be thinking something like along those lines because their outfield is so crowded. This comes from next question comes from JDC on Twitter. Which guys do you expect, he puts in quotes, to one, hit 15 home runs and two, steal 15 bases? Mike, I think we'll both have very similar answers here. Go with yours.
Yeah. First, JDC is an old school, an OG weirdo. So thanks for all the love, JDC. I put these guys for 15 home runs. Bobby, I think that's an obvious one. Sal, Velasquez, Melendez, and Vinny. I think those five guys. There were a couple guys I was like, maybe. Oh, I also have Michael. Michael, I'm believing he's going to get like right at 15, maybe 16 or 17. Stolen bases was a little bit tougher. I went with Bobby, Michael, and Dyron Blanco. I know you've got a few more guys than I do, but I like my list. I'm always the pessimist.
Yeah, you are. I put Massey on the home run list too. I think he could crack 15 just because we can see him put the ball out occasionally. I mean, he does have that pull power. I mean, how many did he have last year? He had like 10 to 12 last year.
I just wasn't sure
year.
How many plate appearances he was going to get.
Yeah, and we can't know that for any of these guys, really. I mean, for some of these guys anyway.
Yeah.
But I'm going to throw him on there. I also put Fermin on there. I think he'll get enough plate appearances, and he hit some home runs last year. So I just throw him on there. I forgot to put Vinny on my list. Not because I don't think he's going to get it, but I just forgot about him. But my stolen base list does have one more number than yours. I put Bobby, Michael, and Blanco as well. Even if Blanco doesn't get a ton of playing time, I think he'll play enough to steal 15 bags.
He steals a base every time he goes in.
It's not that hard. Every time he gets on base, he steals at least one, sometimes two. And so, you know, Blanco, I think, is a really good chance. I put Isbell on there as well because I think Isbell will get enough playing time. And he's an opportunistic base stealer. He's not overly fast, but he does take a bag opportunistically every now and again. And so I think he could make it to 15 as well.
I don't think he's that good at it. I don't think he's that good at stealing bases. I think he's a good base runner. I don't think he's all that good at stealing bases. And I think the Royals are going to, you know, kind of slow him down. I don't think they're going to let him run as much. So we'll see on Isbell. We'll do over under 15. You can buy me a Coke when you lose.
Okay, you even drink Coke that doesn't have whiskey in it. Okay, next question comes from I think it's Snydro is how you pronounce it. Snydro on Twitter. It says, "Will Royals still platoon at DH? What would that mean for Salvi at catching? Is he good enough to be a full time DH?" Mike, what are your thoughts about the Royals and what they're going to do with the DH position?
Yeah, here's the thing. Salvi really likes playing. And so he's going to try and be in every single day in one way or another. So I think we see a heavy rotation at DH like they've done for the last couple of years. It's a little harder this year because you have several guys who aren't great defensively, really a triad. And it's not that Vinny is bad defensively. He's just not good either. He's very average at first base. And then Renfro and Velasquez are probably negatives in the outfield. So, but I do think it's going to be a heavy rotation. The crazy thing is I think we're going to see some left-handed bats get in there at DH that we're not expecting on days when they want to play heavy defense and there's a righty going. And so Melendez is the guy I expect to see some time at DH that people aren't really thinking about now. You know, so because I think at some point they're going to go maybe with an Isbell Hampson Waters outfield or something, and Melendez ends up DHing. So that we get a left-handed bat in there or something like that. So, I do think there's going to be a lot of rotation. I think Salvi is good enough to be a DH full-time, and I think the time is coming for that to happen at some point. For example, I think if the Royals traded him, there's a better chance that he becomes a DH full-time. And I think that will happen at some point. but it's just not, I don't think it's this year.
The question, is he good enough to be a DH full time, really is a question of comparing him to the alternatives. And so is he good enough on the Royals roster to be a DH full time? Probably, because they don't have a ton of options for hitters that sort of give you the power profile of a DH that really have the offensive upside of a guy like Salvador Perez. Is he good enough to be a full-time DH that teams actually want? No, right? There aren't that many of those guys. Teams really like to have that DH as a rotational spot because it allows them to match up that DH against whoever's pitching. And so they can say, oh, we have three guys on our bench. We're going to optimize that DH spot, and we're going to play this guy against this type of pitcher and that guy against that type of pitcher and really get the most out of that DH spot. Unless you're a DH like Manny Ramirez was when he was a DH, Yordan Alvarez is in his prime, although he plays some outfield too. Right? Unless you're that kind of hitter, you are really not DH material, because a combination of guys will most likely be better than you are at DH, if that makes sense. Now, I think that's fine. I think that's a good plan. Salvi will still rotate into that DH role a lot. On his days off, he will still DH a lot. And so I think that's what's ultimately going to happen. I don't think Melendez is going to DH as much as you think. I think conspiracy theory time. I think
here it comes.
That the reason we haven't heard from him, all winter is they're hiding him in like Miami in a facility, just hitting him fly balls every single day. I think that's what's happening right now. Call me crazy. I have no evidence to base it on, but
that's good enough for the internet.
Right. Make me a tinfoil hat, because I got a plan. Next question comes from Instagram instead of Twitter. This is from KC Royals Loyal on Instagram. And it just says, Mikel to second base, yay or nay? Mike, what are your thoughts on Mikel Garcia moving to second base?
Nay. Nay, because I don't think the Royals want to do it. It is an interesting thing to me, and has been even last year. I was thinking about this a lot. The trick is there isn't anybody to come in at third base if you move him to second base. That's really the whole thing. His defense plays better at third base because he's such a phenomenal defender there. Anybody you put there outside of him, not only is it going to be able to do what he does defensively, they probably aren't going to be able to do what he does offensively either. And now if Lofton comes out and he's showing a lot and Massey isn't, then maybe you see a Mikel Garcia slow migration to second base and Lofton coming in to play third more. But I don't think the Royals are going to give up that level of defense on the infield to try and get somebody in at third base like Lofton, because I don't know that they know what he's going to bring offensively. And even defensively, he's not going to bring what Mikel Garcia does. You know, you're getting average to slightly, maybe below average defense there. So maybe above average, but I don't see that happening. No.
Yeah, I would say like ideally, yeah, I would love Mikel Garcia to second base, but what that would mean is they need to have an alternative for third base who can actually produce offensively and that sort of thing, which right now they really don't have. And so I think it would be great if that were the case, because then you improve your offense at second, your defense stays really, really good at second, and maybe you improve your offense at third base, but they don't have that guy right now. And so right now, Mikel Garcia playing third, Massey playing second, or Frazier or whoever seems like the best combination of what they can get. But I'm not, you know, keeping Mikel Garcia to second base out of my mind, because I think maybe Caden Wallace, or maybe they go out and find somebody at third base who's a better option at some point. There's not there are futures that have Mikel Garcia playing second base for the Royals in them. The question is, will they come to fruition? I'm not really sure. My crystal ball's broken. So our final question comes from a friend of ours, Jacob Milham, who is the host of the Royals Rundown podcast. He threw us out a question on Threads, because Mike went out there and solicited some questions on Threads as well. Good job, Mike, getting to the Threadsies. This is a great question. Jacob asks, what is an underrated metric that you use to evaluate pitchers and batters? Mike, I'm going to let you go first.
Yeah, I'm an oldie here. So I'm, you know, this sounds like, you know, old man screaming in a cloud, like, I miss the good old days, at least for pitchers for me, because I still like whip as like the first place I go. You know, I like to go and look at a pitcher's whip, because ultimately, how many guys are you letting on base? You know, and that I always think that's a good indicator for me. Okay, how many guys did you walk? How many hits did you give up? You know, then I go into other things. But the first thing I'm looking for is, what does the guy's whip look like? Is it in the 1.2s? All right. Yay. Yippee. Is it in the 1.4s or the 1.5s? You know, so I'm looking there first, probably. That's one that I guess a lot of people have now moved on from, but I'm still a whip guy. And then,
Mike, I'm going to record that and just put it on my phone as your ringtone. It's just, every time you call me, it's just going to go, I'm still a whip guy.
In the bedroom. For hitters, thank you. I'll be here all week. For hitters, I go with hard hit rate is the one I start with because, and that's one that I think a lot of people use. So it's not going to, I don't know if it's an underrated metric, but, it's the one that I go to most because I feel like that one measures the process to me so much better. You know, if you can consistently hit the ball hard, you should have success to me. You know, I realize there can be problems with launch angle and things like that, but guys who hit the ball hard do well. And so I try to look at that first. Every once in a while, you have a guy who has a really high hard hit rate that doesn't have success or maybe doesn't have as much as he should. We talked about Mikel Garcia with that earlier in the winter. But yeah, that's my go-to, just my starting point, if you will.
Yeah, those both make sense to me. I use both of those quite frequently. I don't know that I would call hard hit underrated at this point. Whip probably still is, though. Or whip was probably underrated at this point because people are now overlooking it. But that's I was struggling with this question because it's hard to know what's underrated. I don't know what other people use. I know what I use. And I know what sort of gets talked about in the deep cut analytics conversation related to baseball. But, you know, it's hard to know what the general public considers overrated. But I'm going to pull out one that I think, like whip, is maybe used to be a lot more valued than it is now, and that's ground ball rate. I look at ground ball rate for pitchers quite a bit. I mean, obviously, I look at their movement metrics and things like that. Those are some deep cut stuff that people look at. But ground ball rate is one that I think people overlook quite a bit. And it's interesting to me because ground ball rate is a good way to sort of look at and think about a pitcher who is not going to be an ace. Right? Like ground balls to some degree hurt you less than line drives and fly balls. And so if you have the capacity to get a bunch of ground balls, it usually means you have the capacity to limit home runs. And it usually means you can stay away from the worst possible outcomes that pitchers can have. And as a result, you can do things like not have a stellar strikeout rate. Right. And so ground ball rate for me is a metric that I go to when I'm trying to think about or evaluate guys who are not going to be aces of staffs, if that makes sense. And so this offseason, when I was looking at free agent starting pitchers, I paid attention to ground ball rates. I paid attention to Martin Perez's ground ball rate, Seth Lugo's ground ball rate, and all these other different guys' ground ball rates. And that's why I was thinking, okay, they're probably going to go for sort of a mid-range back-end guy. So what do these ground ball rates look like? You know, when it comes to hitters, I look at a lot of batted ball metrics probably more than some people do, especially things like line drive rate and sweet spot percentage. If you know what sweet spot percentage is, it's a metric that Baseball Savant uses that essentially measures how frequently somebody hits it within what they consider an optimal launch angle, which I think is like 8 degrees to 35 degrees or something like that. And how frequently they do that tells you a lot about like the success that they can have. The reason I look at that percentage and line drive percentage and things like that is because if you don't have an excessively good hard hit rate, having a high sweet spot rate or a high line drive rate is the only way you can have success. Right? So we talked about Whit Merrifield for years and years and years, did not hit the ball very hard, but he had a really high line drive rate. And so he could be somewhat successful, very successful even, as a hitter. And so those are some metrics that I kind of look at. They're a little bit overlooked, a little bit underrated. So I think a little bit about those. And also something like sweet spot percentage can tell you what a player might need to work on or improve. If you have a really good sweet spot percentage, but you don't hit the ball very hard, it becomes pretty clear why you're not having success offensively. You need to hit the ball harder. You need to get more bat speed or whatever, you know, like, and so these different things can tell you a lot more about a player. And sometimes they're overlooked by people. Royals Weekly is brought to you by All In Physical Therapy. For one-on-one personalized physical therapy, we choose All In Physical Therapy. They took excellent care of our mother after surgery left her with pain and limited mobility in her arm. She loves to work out, be active.
The military tried to take her blood to make super soldier juice. Needles just kept breaking on her skin.
Yeah. The excellent specialized care she got at All In Physical Therapy had her back to being active in no time.
I'd like to meet the fool dumb enough to approach my mother with a needle. You're a brave man.
Can't meet him. He's dead. All in Physical Therapy knows how to help athletes recover. It's owned and operated by Lisa Matone, Tommy Frevert, a former Arena League football player, Northwest Missouri State Bearcat, and a hell of a guy. They have offices in both Blue Springs and Lee Summit, so get over there to work with Tommy. Tell your doctor you want to do your physical therapy with the best of the best at All in Physical Therapy. To learn more, give them a call at 816-427-5300. That's 816-427-5300. Or visit their website at allin-pt.com. That's allin-pt.com.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
With all the roster additions for the Royals at the Major League level, Mike and I have been wanting to have a conversation about what these moves mean for some players who are close to making their big league debuts, Tyler Gentry and Will Klein. Both were added to the 40-man roster to protect them from the Rule 5 draft this year, which makes it more likely that they're going to see Major League time in 2024, but the Royals have added players in the bullpen and the outfield, complicating their paths. Mike, for our listeners who don't know, just give us a quick breakdown of who Tyler Gentry and Will Klein are.
Well, Gentry is a corner outfielder, exploded onto the prospect scene a couple of years ago with a massive year. And I think it was mostly in Double A, but a little bit, maybe a little high A too in there. Great walk rate, great, and strikeout numbers. He takes a really competent at bat. That's kind of why he's your boy and you like him so much. I don't know that he has one explosive tool, or like scouts sometimes call a carrying tool, but it's a lot of solid tools. And so he hits the ball hard enough. He takes the great approach. He's a solid, if not spectacular, outfielder. He's seems like a guy who could be a solid contributor, like a David DeJesus level, probably with a little more pop than DeJesus had. But that level of player. Klein is a flame-throwing righty reliever who has had control issues at times. So big 100-mile-an-hour fastball, and sometimes can't tell where it's going. So. But both those guys at some point could be valuable pieces.
Yeah, Gentry, if he had a carrying tool, it would actually probably be his approach at the plate. They don't call that a tool in scouting terms, but that is the thing that will give him a chance to be successful in Major League Baseball. Let's start with Gentry. I think the consensus is that he's the most ready of those two to make a Major League debut. What do you think Gentry's path is to the majors at this point?
Well, this is really tough, and I feel bad in a sense for Tyler Gentry, but it's a crowded outfield, you know, especially on the corners. And so I don't necessarily see a path to the majors right now for him. Now, after the trade deadline, if we deal away guys like Hunter Renfroe or maybe a Drew Waters or both or something like that, if a spot is cleared up at some point in the outfield on the corners, Gentry is the guy, but it's not a great chance that he gets early playing time this year. I think you see him at some point just because of attrition and because of, you know, trades after the deadline. But it worries me that he's going to come up and not see a lot of playing time at some point.
Yeah, I think his best bet is to just sort of have a really hot start and force the Royals to make some trades, right? It makes sense for the Royals. If Gentry comes out and he's hitting 380, 500, 650 at the, you know, 2 months in, they can start thinking, okay, we got to trade Hunter Renfroe at the deadline because we got a guy who's ready to take one of these outfield spots, right? Like that, you can't keep that guy down for much longer, right? And so, you know, that's his best path to the major leagues. He can wait it out, wait for them to trade some guys at the deadline maybe, but he's got to go out there and really push the envelope and have a great opening to the season and prove to the Royals that they need to get rid of some outfield guys so he can make his debut in the corner. Do you think Gentry is a candidate to make a fairly smooth transition to the majors, Mike?
Well, normally I would say yes, because I think the thing that smooths the transition for hitters is that great approach, and he's got that. The problem is, I think this may be the case. I think he comes up and doesn't get consistent playing time. And so if that ends up happening, then I worry about him making the transition to a tough Major League Baseball, because the jump is very difficult Okay. The jump is even more difficult if you make the jump and then you're playing once or twice a week instead of regularly. And so that's the big worry that I have. Normally I would say, hey, he's got a great approach that should stick. Those don't go in slumps, but I kind of worry about the inconsistent playing time.
I would have had a similar worry 2 years ago in the Dayton Moore era when we saw Kyle Isbell have that problem, when they would bring him up and he'd spend a month in the major leagues playing once or twice a week. And that was a bad thing to do for his development. But I have more faith in this front office and more faith in this coaching staff that they're going to, if they bring a guy up, they're going to do it with the intention of putting him in to play. Right. And so they don't bring guys up unless they're forced to in some way. So like injury, sometimes they brought up Samad Taylor a little bit because they had no choice. They needed him for certain things. But if you're ready to play, I think they're bringing you up with the intention that you're going to play enough so that it doesn't hurt your development in some way. So I trust this this front office and this coaching staff more than I would have previously. So I think his transition will be fairly smooth as far as these things go, because he does have that excellent plate appearance, that excellent ability to approach at the plate. I think it'd be look a little bit similar to a Vinny Pasquantino, where he sort of made a fairly smooth transition and leaned heavily on his good approach to create good outcomes right away. What about Kline? Pitching is far more injury prone and relievers are notoriously volatile. Do you think that he has the possibility of having an earlier debut than maybe we suspect?
I think there's a small chance that we see Kline early, but I do think it would be as a result of injuries, which hey, in a bullpen, those can happen in bunches. And so, yeah, it's possible. And or if you see... The thing that makes that tough is they're going to keep Matt Sauer in that bullpen. And so there's one spot gone. They have John McMillan, who has a very similar profile to Will Kline. They have Steven Cruz even, who has a similar profile. So I think they're going to protect him a little bit, keep him in AAA, let him work on his command, see if they can't figure out the pitch mix and things like that that work the absolute best for Will Kline. And then I think you see him probably later in the year. I think as long as there's not big time injury problems, I think you probably see him closer to be like, hey, you've done well in AAA this year. September comes. You're definitely, you know, the one or two guys that we get in September. I could see that coming for Will Kline, especially when they need arms.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, Kline in September makes a whole lot of sense to me, especially when the rosters expand to 28. Like, I think no matter what, you'll probably see Kline in September. That makes a lot of sense, unless he's hurt or unless he has a blow up or something. I think there's a good chance that you see him later this season, especially because there's a really good chance they move some of these relievers at the deadline. There's a good chance Will Smith is gone. There's a decent chance Stratton is gone. There's a decent chance that Sauer doesn't stick with the team throughout the whole year. And he ends up back with the previous team. That happens all the time. And so we'll see on that front. But Kline, a guy who, you know, at least the path forward seems like it makes a little more sense than with the Gentry path, which is like, man, there are like 12 outfielders vying for three spots here, you know. Like, and so we'll see on that one.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We'll end this week's episode like we end every episode with the Just a Bit Outside segment, where we talk about something that's interesting to us outside the world of baseball over the course of the last week. We haven't had an episode for a month, so Mike, you have a whole bunch of stuff to pick from. I feel like you're still going to go with the 2-foot putt, though, so go ahead, Mike. Take the easy road. Take the short and quick path out. What are those? You should have those inspirational posters made up where you just talk about being lazy. Like, when in doubt, be lazy or something.
Yeah. I'm going to go with the slam dunk here. All right. And I'm not ashamed to admit it, because somebody has to talk about this, because it's somewhat unprecedented, guys. We watched the greatest football team in the country, in the world, play today, go out and be underdogs and win in a hostile environment. Okay. Mark and I were born in Kansas City. We weren't raised here, but we were born here. We've always had a lot of ties to the Kansas City area, even when we lived in our hometown. We drudged through the Tyler Thigpen, Brody Croyle, you know, I remember getting super hyped for guys like Sylvester Morris and you know,
Tyler Palko,
yeah, and yeah, he got some starts for this team. My God, the Damon Heward days and things like that. So we, you know, and if you're older than us, if you were alive when the Chiefs were playing in the 80s, that was even worse. Probably they were terrible in the 80s, and so, you know, to have the best football player at their position, possibly all time, two guys at the same time, and Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes. I am so grateful that my son will get to watch that. I am so grateful that I get to watch that, and that the greater Kansas City area gets to participate in those things and every game. I mean, my wife, who doesn't like sports and hates that I love football so much, watched the game with me today. And so, you know, it can bring a community together. It's been so awesome watching them. We're going to the Super Bowl again. It's like, just schedule the damn thing for us every year, because I want that trophy again. And let's keep rolling.
You hear that, Chiefs? You're bringing families together.
But no, Mark, go with your deep cut, depressing garbage that you always go.
No, my pick isn't depressing.
That's right.
The outline.
Inspirational stuff. And you always talk about how
lighthearted and funny.
So, Mark, tell us.
No. I'm talking about the excellent film Beverly Hills Cop. And here's why. I watched it last night.
It is a phenomenal film.
Riggs, my partner, who this movie came out. Well, I guess this movie probably came out before I was born even. But she had never seen it. It came out well before she was born. And so she had never seen it. So we sat down and watched it last night. And man, I'm just reminded of what a banger this movie is. There are so many jokes in this movie that just hit so hard.
You know what's crazy?
What?
How young Eddie Murphy was when 48 Hours and Beverly Hills Cop came out.
I made that point last night.
He was 19 when he started on Saturday Night Live. The guy is, we don't talk about him enough as one of the greatest actors, not just comedic actors, one of the greatest actors of all time.
Yeah, he is amazing. And what's amazing about rewatching a movie like this is you forget that there are like jokes sort of subtly placed in there. Obviously there are iconic scenes in it, right? The art gallery scene that he has with, I don't know the actor's name, but he plays Serge.
You got to play Serge.
Just kills me. It killed me. I was dying laughing at this scene. It was so funny. And then you have to really tell a joke. Just the two of them interacting is hilarious. Right. And so like that scene was a banger, but sometimes he just like slips in. So when he throws in that line, the super cop story was working. I died. I just died laughing. Like I could not. It was just so funny.
I got to go watch it again.
Oh, it's honestly, it's on Netflix. I'm going to see if she'll watch the second one with me too. But like, what a great movie. They're coming out with a fourth one, FYI. He's like doing like, ever since he like did the sequel for Coming to America, he's got this contract or this deal with Netflix. And so he's putting out like, sequels of his old hits. I'll watch it. I don't care. The third one was bad, but I don't care. I'll watch it just to see what it's like. Anyway, if you get a chance, if you've never seen Beverly Hills Cop, absolutely go see it, right? Absolutely see it. But if you have,
fantastic.
Rewatch it. It's so good. It will not miss. It will not miss, especially after a hard day when you're like, I can't take anything that's like heavy or anything like that. Go watch Beverly Hills Cop. You'll feel 100 times better after you watch it.
And the beginning's kind of heavy.
But it is, but they move on from that guy's murder real quick. Honestly, I just rewatched him. I was like, okay, he's like 30 seconds after that dude gets murdered. He's like laughing in Beverly Hills. Like it's wild. So yeah, all the heavy stuff gets moved on from very quickly. I promise. I'll tell you what else is going to happen very quickly. Pitchers and catchers are going to report very quickly. It's 2 weeks until that happens. Can't wait for the upcoming season. Can't wait to see you all again. We're not going to wait a whole month. We're going to come back again in a couple of weeks when we're about to kick off spring training with our next episode. That's when we'll have big announcements for you. That's when we'll start off our regular programming. Until then, be good to each other.
And go Royals.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.